Good afternoon. We're going to come back to the public session of Aspira of the Delaware Charter Operations. Any motions from the executive session?
Motion to oh my gosh. Motion to accept a legal matter discussed in executive session.
Do I have a second?
Second, John.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion approved. Thank you. Thank you, Louis. Mm-hmm. So actually we need, well, do we have any public comments? So we're going to move with the rest of the agenda. We have meeting minutes to approve. We have new business, financial committee report, development committee report, operations committee report, and head of schools. So on the meeting minutes, any comments or questions or updates?
None. Motion to accept.
Do I have a second?
You in a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you. On the new business, we just want to make sure that we validate our board composition as well as the officers of the board. So we have myself, Lourdes Puig, as the chairperson, Mr. Donald Patton as the vice chairperson, Luis Santiago as the treasurer, Jonas Abusi as the secretary, Tiffany Burton as the teacher representative, Crystal Mayfield as the parent representative, Benjamin Sparza, Sarah Jopeski, Rosalie Ron Dow, and Fred West as overall community representative. I guess we probably should issue a vote on the officers, that we accept the proposal of the officers.
Motion to accept the proposal of Officer Santiago.
Do I have a second?
Second, Ms. Barza.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you for everybody volunteering and willing to serve on the board. Finance Committee.
Right. Seems like old news. We're going to talk about fiscal year 19 and how we ended. So you have three reports. Take the report ending June 30th. And as always, we start with the revenue. For state, we had a budget last year of $7.07 million. We pulled in $7.108 million, or 101%. You see to the right, we are $36,000 favorable. Subtotal local, $4.685 million was a budget. We got for almost $5 million. We are $303,000 favorable, or 106% budget. And then last but not least, subtotal for federal, $476,000 was your budget. And we pulled in $488,000, or 103%, or $12,000 favorable. So, overall, we had a budget for all of FSF revenue, $12.234 million. We came in at $12.586, 103%, or $332,000 to the good. So obviously, that's a good year for revenue. And we flip to the next page. And like always, I'll get into the expense detail in a few minutes. But overall, our expenses, the budget was $13.425 million. We came in a little under $52,000 to the good. We came in at the year $13.7372 million. It rounds up to 100%, but again, we are $52,000 under. So we're over in revenue and in under in expenses. So obviously a good year for our budget. And you get to the next page, which shows our monthly. So the last month in June, we spent $997,000. You see when you look at the colorful line graph, that red line versus the blue line, that span just got wider and wider. We had a carryover, which is what it depicts. As far as your local funding update, that didn't change since I think around January. We were 100% for the year. No changes there. Then the next page, This would include any encumbered money that we had. This is actual versus actual. This has nothing to do with budget. So you see amount received to date, $14.779 million. And that would have included the revenue we carried over from fiscal year 18. And then our expenses, which you just heard, was $13.37 million. Or our carryover, which we carried over into this year's operating budget, $1.406 million. So all good on that front. And then real quick on the expenses, we always start off with total salaries. We were a budget of $5.87 million. We came in at $5.9 million, 101%. But OECs were at 99%. The budget was $3.18 million, and we came in at $3.14 million. So I'm pretty much a wash there. And in total travel, it's a small bucket, but $29,000 is our overall budget. We were a little bit under. We spent $27,000. Then the next page, total debt service, which stayed that number of $1.086 million since July of 18. We finished the year 100%. All the way down the bottom, total contracted services, the overall budget was $1.839 million. We came in at $18.29, or 99%. You'll see there's no notes on the right because there's no variances. And then the last page, total supplies, materials, $744,000 is your budget. We came in at $709,000, or 95%. Then total capital outlay equipment, $73,000 was the budget. We were a little high, $89,000, but that was a result of purchasing furniture for this school year. And then total capital outlay property, $587,000 was the budget. We were at $559,200. Or 95%. So grand total overall, again, the budget for fiscal year 19 expenditures was $13.425 million, and we came in at $13.37 million, or again, $52,000. So budget-wise, we had a... Okay? And so now...
And this 52 will be able to carry over into next year.
Pardon, say that again, Ben?
The 52.
Yeah, actually it's 1.406. I'm going to get, it all carries over. So we were under in expenses, over in revenue, but we obviously did build up. We built onto our carryover.
Great.
So go ahead, Eunice.
Sorry, that 14. I thought that was with the carryover from last year.
Which page are you on?
The revenue. So the total revenue, that's the...
Yeah, so if you look at the bottom, and that would have been on the budget, we had depicted a deficit spend overall because of capital, okay, for the budget. The carryover from fiscal year 18 was... 2.193 million. Right. But for new revenue, we actually came in at like $352,000 favorable to what we budgeted for new revenue.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to make sure the 14, that's with the carrier.
Last year's carrier.
With last year's carrier.
Yes.
Okay. Exactly.
So if we're comparing FY18 carryover to FY19, it's actually a reduction.
19 is lower, but it's actually higher than what was budgeted. Okay.
I got that part. Yeah. I just wanted to make that clarification.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we did consume from the carryover.
Absolutely.
And that's because of the capital. I mean,
It's
understandable. I just wanted to make that clear.
It's a great point. So I say, but budget-wise, we had a good year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Definitely take care of it, yep.
So instead of doing the July financial report, what I want to do now is jump into the preliminary operating budget because then that obviously translates into our new financial report. Okay, so that's the one that says, obviously, preliminary operating budget, and this is fiscal year 2020.
Do we need to approve the June one?
We do it all together. It doesn't matter. However you want to do it.
We can do it all.
You want to approve that report?
We can do it all.
Okay. So go to the third page, which is your assumptions page, because we do this every year, and it's important that everyone sees the assumptions. Everyone see where I'm at?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, projected September 30th enrollment is 943 students. The second note is revenue projections included carryover, which I just mentioned, 1.407 million. Revenue projections assume minimal donations. State funding projections are based on our fiscal year 19 funding. Same with our local school district projections. And then revenue projections include $1.5 million in investment money and recently awarded charter school grant, which I thankfully, or is reminding me, I sent an email out about that, but we were awarded that $750,000 grant, $500,000 that comes this year, okay?
Yeah.
And then I think everyone on the board knows how we pay our staff, but I always keep this on here. It takes 6 years before you're 100% at Christina School District salary scale.
5 years.
Well, I'm sorry, 6 years.
When I, 5 years.
Okay, boss.
Another 6 year.
All right. Expenditures include lease fit out, operational and maintenance costs of the high school property. Okay? So now look down a little bit midway to the page. So on the left, when you look at the percent of total FY20 revenue targets, the left is our budgeting model, which it shows salaries and OECs, the range is 65 to 75%. Mortgage rent, less than 15%, student transportation, each 10%, and then remainder is 10 to 15%. So I show our FY19 operating budget, and then you look at the right, this is now based on our preliminary operating budget. One note I added, it's in red, so you can't miss it. For these calculations, because it's based on new revenue, I did not include the $1.5 million in investment money or $500,000 grant money. But it's really a one-time deal. We'll get some next year, but it skews the numbers it would lower those numbers, like for salaries and all that. So that's why I wanted to point that out.
Yeah, the other thing too, is that as we talk, these guidelines that we have, I mean, these are what New York Charter is leveraging, is the model that they've used. So you think about where they are today, where they're saving $1 million a year and putting that away, it obviously works. And just, you know, for new members of the board, just understanding kind of where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we just picked it out of thin air.
Yep. Okay, so now next to this long page here. So this basically breaks it down, like every piece of our revenue, starting off with state. So I always report on the financial reports. It's always in the same order, state, local, and federal. This is just a true breakdown of how we get our money. If you look to the third column to the right, you see this is fiscal year 20 and 943 students, and it drops all the way down that column. Everything in red is carryover money. So that doesn't get added in the subtotals, if you will, but it does get added at the bottom in red where it says previous year carryover, and you'll see that number again, that's $1.406 million, almost $1.407. So I don't think I need to talk about every line here, but as far as the subtotal for state, what I want to point out to you is the very last line is a charter school grant. That's what we just received. We have a confirmation letter. So I put that $500,000 in. Everything else is based on actuals or what we know we're getting as far as sustainment funds. When you look at SSBG K-3, these are other types of funding that we know we're getting. Anything up top, the 05213, is all projected based on our first paper rates last year.
Greg, I just want to make sure I'm following. I'm sorry.
No.
So the $500,000 that you put in, it's not the same $500,000 you talked about in the beginning?
It is.
Okay.
So it's part of the revenue, but I don't count it as a calculation towards that model.
All right, I'm following now. All right, I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. All right.
So some of the new money that we're talking about, if you look at the bottom here, you see Opportunity Fund,
mm-hmm.
Opportunity Fund Health
yep.
and Community Support. This was all part of last year's state
budget.
Yeah,
it's not built into the ratios.
No.
Okay.
So overall, you'll see that I'm projecting a little under $8.9 million in state money, which is pretty good. And then when we get down to local section, overall, I have a projection of it's significantly higher than the 4.6 from last year, 7.06 million. But I want to point out in the construction fund, I added the $1.5 million for investment money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The rest, again, at the very top, the local districts transfers. You won't see any on this month's report and next month's report, but you'll see that in the following reports when we start getting the money coming from the school district. That's the tax money that follows the students based on the districts. So again, nothing real exciting here. I use the same calculation I use every year. I base on what we got last year per pupil, actual numbers. And then the bottom is your subtotal federal. This is all money that is projected that we're getting through what we call, you've heard it before, the consolidated grant. It's a federal grant that we get every year. Sometimes those numbers change. We get adjustments, but that's driven by the federal government when it gets to the state level. But this is what we know we're getting, and that's what we budget for. So it's $433,000 this year. So overall, you see we're going to jump from original budget. Yes, sir.
Why is that lower than last year?
Yeah, the 72,000 is
a great point. So look at there was a 72 impact and displacement award. We got $72,000 last year. We don't get it this year. Mm-hmm. If you remember, when Puerto Rico got crushed by that hurricane, we picked up 10 students. And you know, districts don't want to take the students. We took them because it was the right thing to do. We didn't get any money for it. Yeah. They came back the following year, last year, and gave us money.
Yeah, so but doesn't that go into our per pupil rate this year, right?
Pardon?
We get funding for them this year in our regular funding.
We get none of that.
Yeah, it's just that they came after September 30th.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. It's part of our count now. So that's my point.
It's just not a separate, right?
That's right, yeah, exactly. I got it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just like a back pay, basically.
Exactly.
But now, in our go forward, it's all built in.
So that's a great catcher. That's why that number is lower, because if you think about it, our enrollment's a lot higher. It's over 100 students higher this year, so that number would obviously want to be higher. Now. So, good catch. Okay, so again, total FSF, which is new revenue, $16.38 million for the year, and then drop down, you'll see my total expenditures, all categories, that is $16.2 million. So you'll see a slight increase in our carryover from 1.406 to 1.517. So I think most of you understand this. I mean, we obviously have some costs for the high school this year that are going to be coming out of our operating budget. The nice thing is we're getting grant money, but it all has to show as expense, and we operate on one budget, okay? But we still are, we're not operating in deficit spend. We are definitely increasing our carrier, which is the track that we want to continue. Any questions on that sheet? Can you probably get into some detail?
Again, I just want to confirm to myself, the 943, that's based on current enrollment, right?
Yeah, actually, I think we might end up with 945, but it's going to be at least 943. Right. We'll get that verified September 30th.
So, and where are we housing that increase in number of students?
Say that again?
Yeah. So because we had construction going on, is that why we didn't have all the classroom available?
Remember, so we lost a window of opportunity when we finished the construction. Mm-hmm. We had capacity to basically expedite our enrollment projections 1 year forward, but when we went to the Department of Education to ask them if we could expedite, they said, no, you got to go through the modification process, and that window has already closed. You're too late.
Okay.
So we had to sort of,
I didn't remember some of that.
This year is the first year that really all the classrooms
are full.
Yeah. Got rid of our bubble. It's a shame that we missed that window, because that probably would have helped us in terms of the fact that we ate a little bit of our reserve. But, I mean, we're still in good shape, and now we're having the full enrollment. Yeah.
These are all excellent points. Okay, so I'm going to try not to confuse you on the expenditures here. So we're going to get into a little bit of the detail. So I just want to, I guess, warn you up front. So As of July 1 of this year, we now have some different coding we have to use for expense lines. So it's going to get some, it's going to take getting used to. It is for me as well and my team as well, but it's kind of interesting. The big change you're going to see when I get into it is a debt where it moved to. But Lewis came up with a good idea, which you're going to see in the financial report, that we still split it out so everyone can see what our actual bond debt service is.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to try to walk through a little bit here, and then I will really get into the detail in the financial report and talk about some of our new account codes, because I don't want to bore you to death, to be honest with you. So, total, the important stuff here, total salaries, and budget $6.37 million. Our other employment costs were $3.47 million, and I put the new percentage. Last year it was, I think, 32.46. It went down a little bit, but where you look at pension, workers' comp, Social Security, and all that, this is all driven by the state. So that's our additional cost. That's how we come up with those numbers. So again, the percent of new revenue, not including the $2 million with the investment and the grant, that puts it at 68% towards budget, which is a number that I'd love to see us stick to. Total travel, I will point out, this is a lot larger bucket here. The reason is student transportation, which formerly was in the lower line, is now up there, and you can see that number is over $900,000. Mm-hmm. So you can look at last year. I always say it's a small bucket when I do the financials. $29,000 last year, we're now at almost $1 million.
Yeah.
Okay? And then the next page.
So what's the reason behind moving it here?
It all has to do with the ESSER reporting. So the whole, everyone in the state, all the schools, they started work on this last year. But we have to report, it's easier to report expenditures. They're a little more broken down. We've always had good detail, which, has helped us, I think, but it is a little bit of a change for us when we look at it, but it all has to come down to the requirements and how we have to report it.
Yeah.
So the last page here, so right up top, you'll see there's nothing in total debt service, but if you look all the way down in total capital outlay equipment, you'll see $2.881 million down there. So that's now where our debt service is. But again, we are breaking it out in our financial report so you can see it every month.
Yeah.
Okay? And then the next one was $55,000, which was other professional services. I thought we've always done a good job of listing the different breakouts and how we, what goes in that code, expense code. But now those lines have been moved. We don't use that line item, $55,000 anymore. Okay? If you go down to total contracted services, the budget is 1.7, which is lower than last year, but again, the debt service moves. So actually, I'm sure you all understand this, our expenses really went up in this category. It's just we've taken some heavy hitters out of this.
I.e. the bus.
Yeah.
Which is a question. So, when I look at the buses, I thought we were like 100%.
We are.
So none of this is really. It's just a whitewash.
It's kind of like it's an in and out.
It's a pass through.
Okay. It's a pass through.
Okay.
It's all expenses, but 100% of the state money we receive goes to Sutton Bus, but then what we pay for is extracurriculars, and that's why students pay for field trips and things like that. Okay, so just, I'll get into it in the financial report, just to give you an idea on some of the new line items. Starting under professional services, which was at line 55,000, we now have landscaping services, 55003. We have construction / building services, which is basically what Howard Smith will fall under for his consulting work that he does with the construction. We have 55030, instructional services. We have 55032, which used to be all coded in 55010. Now that's split out. We keep the nurse up top, and the contracted nurse, we keep in 55010, but we move all the site, PT, OT, all that therapy, who's done from vendors from the outside, that's in a different line now. Central Admin Services, that's our auditing data service center, now that's a separate line. And then even food service operations, equipment and maintenance, things like that. Electric, our utility bill, you know, Delmarva used to be one line, it was 55203, now it's two lines. It's 55205 for electric and 55206 for natural gas. So we have to split the bill out when we get it and pay it separately that way. 5509 is a new line. 55521, that's basically for backing up our servers. We pay Tech Solutions monthly, but that's where that money will go to. Then all the way down in the total supplies materials line, that budget number is $825,850. It is a slight increase from last year, but there's another new line in there, cafeteria supplies. So again, it's just going to be, it's bills that we paid in the past. We're just going to see a little more detail, and they're not in the same buckets they used to be, or the same or old expense lines. Total capital outlay equipment, that budget is only $20,000 now, and that's going to be probably some maintenance equipment for the new facility.
Going back for the electric, we spend $160,000.
We spend big money.
Have we thought about doing solar panels?
It's been talked about.
You have a flat roof.
I'll be honest with you. When I see a bill under $10,000, I get excited.
I think that we looked into solar panels on the roof, but it was too heavy. The solar panels would be too heavy.
Really? It's come up a few times.
We've tried to do like solar arrays just out, but it's not going to collect to put us off the grid. Yeah.
Good question, though. And then the last bucket, which is huge now, total capital outlay property is now almost $2.9 million. But we've got $1.6 million in there for construction at the high school, and we've got almost $1.3 million in bond debt service.
Yeah.
So that's how we get to $16.274 million for our budgeted expenses.
Yep.
I know it's clear as mud right now, but we'll get used to it as I do the financial reports.
Yeah, because you have to build your forecast off of that too. So it'll all work out. The one thing I do want to point to the board is, if you look at the instructional supplies under total supplies and materials, that's line 56150. Historically, it's been $140,000 over the last couple of years. I was really happy to see that we're making a pretty significant investment in our teachers for our academics, because it is one place that, when we talked to the FOC, I wanted to make sure we were making that investment, and it looks like the management team, you know, went ahead and did that, because that's about a 60% increase in that bucket, which is, I feel, is appropriate given what we're trying to actually accomplish. And reading some of the materials that we're going to cover today, I think it makes sense. So I think this is a pretty good commitment from us. I mean, that's the one piece I just want to make sure the board is aware of, that, you know, the management team did a good job of taking a step back and looking that we need to make some investments on that end. So that's the one thing I just wanted to see in this whole thing, and I want to make sure that you guys were aware that that's
driving for results, right?
That's right. So.
All right, so now for the fun stuff, we're going to talk about their first financial report for fiscal year 20, which is the one that ends July 31st. In here. So, as always, these reports will look the same. We'll start with revenue. So, right now, our budget again is $8.886 million. We have $6.5 million. That's basically our state pre-load, which is at the very top line, and some of these other new funding that we receive. So, 74%, it's right on par where we are every year. Our local, it's only 1%, but again, nothing to be concerned about. You'll see a change in the next couple months, but the budget's $7.06 million. We've collected $55,000 to date. A long way to go, but again, this is very normal for this time of year. Next month will be the same type of report. And when you look at federal, we've got nothing because the consolidated grant has not been approved yet. It will be, and we will get all the money, just like we're predicting. So you'll see 0% this month and next month, and then I think you'll see when I report on the September, the month of September is when we should be loaded there. So right now the total budget for revenue is $16.38 million. For new revenue, we've got almost $6.6 million or 40%, but absolutely no concerns. It's just the way it works when we start the new year. Then next page we talk about expenses. The overall budget is $16.27 million. Right now we're at 2.08, but you'll see at that very bottom line, which I'll show you in the detail, we already spent $1.27 million. That was the bond finance. So we're at 44%, which gives us an unfavorable variance. I talked about what Lewis's suggestion was in FOC, but I've added in a couple places so everyone can see our variance note. It's our annual debt service. We always paid in July.
And I'll be very specific. I set out, I want to make sure the board is always aware that we pay $1.3 million in debt service every single year up front. Like, I want to make sure it's anything you ever walk away from, you know that that's what we pay.
Okay, so the next page, can't get too excited about that because there's no trending, so you're not going to see a whole lot here, but a big blue line. I will tell you, we spent $2.089 million in July, and next August report will be similar, and we'll see nothing in the local funding update. That's the school district money, so that'll be blank as well.
So, Greg.
Yes, sir.
Do we always have to make sure we have enough carryover to cover that?
Before
we do,
yeah.
Well, the other thing, I didn't mention it. I talked about it previously, but on the operating budget,
yeah.
What we have to make sure, and I've added
is
it,
is the four
payrolls as well. So that's the blue line and the
green line.
I apologize, I didn't mention that. I'm sorry, the green line.
Yeah,
the green line.
Okay.
And that's something that the CSAT, the committee, would want to see as well.
Because our prelude comes in, and that's typically what we're able to use to pay for the debt service. But regardless of that, there has to be enough cash to pay for.
We don't open a year in July. Like, So, Eunice, when we really opened the books up in July, we had new money already, almost $6 million from the state. So we would be okay, but we still don't want to...
Yeah,
we don't want to start the year off without having covered those four payrolls, which does take care of the debt service. But it's really, the big concern is, not that it'll ever happen, but if we had to shut our doors June 30th, that the teachers would get paid their contract. Mm-hmm. Even though we don't use contract, there's still due four payrolls that get spread out into August, July and August. Okay?
Yeah.
Do we know what the debt payment is going to be ahead of time? Right? We have a schedule.
Oh, yeah. We're at MADS. I've talked about this before. I love these questions.
Sorry.
Maximum annual debt service now for the
remaining terms
is $1.3 million. And it fluctuates a little bit, basically, and that's what Lewis was saying. Everyone's going to get used to seeing that this school pays $1.3 million in bond debt service.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have the amortization schedule, we have the debt schedule, we have all that. All right. So now, let's see, I don't think I covered this page. Let's look at the this page here. It says cash position. So that includes all your encumbered money. Kind of follows up with what Lewis was saying. So you'll see we had, in July, we had almost $83,000 in encumbered money. That was all correct for on structure supplies. So we do a lot of heavy lifting in the beginning to get the school ramped up and the teachers prepared and have the materials to get going with the students.
So now, Margie, make your wish list bigger next year.
So here, this includes the actual carrier, because this really isn't budget. This is actual versus actual. So you see at the bottom we have a little over $8 million. We spent, I already told you, $2.089 million. And then you add the encumbered money. So we have $5.8 million left. But again, this is so typical to the start of the school year. And next month will be very similar.
Yep.
So now we can get into the expense detail. Total salaries, The budget is 6.377 million. We're at 464,000, or 7%. Other employment costs, 3.47 million as a budget. We're at about 256,000, or again 7%. And that is big bucket here. Total travel, the budget's 990,000. And we're at 3,195, not even really rounds down to 0%. But we'll start getting some transportation invoices here soon. And then the last sheet here, total contracted services. So again, you're not seeing debt service in at the top of that page anymore. Total contracted services, 1.707 is the budget. 1.707 million. We've spent almost 71,000. 4% through our new variance is here. Then total supplies and materials, which is where you see all the uncovered money, which is actually and instructional supplies. We have a budget of 825,000, and including encumbered money, it's at 100,000 through July, or 12% of budget. And in total capital outlay equipment, 20,000, again, that will be for equipment over at the high school. We haven't spent any money there, so it's at zero. And then look at this here in total capital outlay equipment. I added, so you have 58,300 that line. You have it twice. One is for bond debt service, and then the other is for construction. So I broke that out, and I'll show it this way going forward. You'll see our debt service is paid. We obviously have not started construction, so that's zero right now. But the overall budget is 2.88 million. And we paid the debt service of almost 1.3 million, which is what puts us at 44%. So grand total, again, 16.274 million is our budget. With our encumbered money, we're at 2.17, or 13%. And we'll run high on as far as, you know, over to, like this month should be 8%. We like to follow, but ever since we started paying this debt service, we'll never be at 8%.
Never.
So no concerns. It's a little different look, but still revenue and expenses. Any questions?
Yes. The 1.6 for the building, I thought we said we expect to be 2.0. Is it because we're not going to pay everything
year? Another great question. So what happens is our applications for payments and construction will carry over into fiscal year 21. I'm sorry.
Any other comments or questions?
I'm not allowed to digest.
No, this is great information, though. I mean, it's nice to finish the year strong, and great to have a strong foundation for the upcoming year, particularly because we have such an increase on enrollment that really is what gives us the stability. Yeah. So, I mean, everything is really coming together of where we're heading forward. So. Great work. How about a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion if we accept.
That's okay. No, motion to approve.
So we got
it.
The June report.
All reports. All reports provided.
Do I have a second?
That's good.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so financial reports approved. Development committee, Fred is not able to join us this evening, but I guess the only thing I share is he and I had the opportunity to meet with Lynn, and we're kind of working on developing elements of the capital campaign. One thing that Fred and I would like to ask the board, if there's somebody interested in joining he and I as part of a capital campaign committee. We're going to be also reaching out to other people outside the school to join the committee, but it would be nice if somebody else from the board would be willing to participate. So not everybody raised their hand at once, but do let me know about that. I think that's all from the development committee on this. So operations.
I will be quick as well. I've reached out to Mr. Gregg, and we're working on small improvements to our playground area.
possibly adding old school games like Foursquare for the kids and having it painted out for
them. Those are old school games. Those are games.
That's classic,
those,
yeah. But they don't know. Yeah. So that we're having like bases painted on the things, so we don't have to worry about like the mask being lost and hopscotch, mm-hmm. just things like that, and possibly having, if we can, instead of the portable basketball nets, ones that are already cemented in so that we don't have to worry about the kids hanging on them or trying to adjust them. It's just like regulation, and having both of those in the front and the back, as well as the four square and stuff in the back. So we're working on that. And then I need to schedule a meeting with the committee as a whole, so we can go over all the data that we collected last year with the survey and see, like, as committee, what our next steps are. But for right now, it's making the playground more fun so I can play Foursquare.
There are some concerns since the trees are out, but the kids are in rock pots.
Some sort of cover.
Yeah, maybe shade structure.
Yeah.
I know that there's grants available for the dermatology mm-hmm. something. I just don't know how they would attach.
Because I know they added something in, like, the ECDC.
Right, they had to.
Yeah, for the little kid. So, yeah, it would definitely, that would be good, too. But, yeah, so... That's really all I have.
Sorry,
I'm not you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Greg? Yes. Let's do construction. From the liberation, let's do a construction update.
Yeah, so real quick, today was an exciting day because I thought, oh, here we go again. So we had the pre-bid meeting. The RFP went out to 8 general contractors in the area, which all attended the meeting, which was a requirement for them to give us a proposal. And those companies are Bancroft, EDIS, Emery Hill, GGA, Nason Construction, Nolan Associates, SCA, and Wilson. So we had the meeting today. I think it was at 10 o'clock at the high school location. Howard was there and Paul. Paul Deladon is our facilities chief, so he's there now full time. So we did an opening. Welcome them all, and Howard did a nice job facilitating the meeting. Then we did a walkthrough, and they asked questions. And I know some others will be coming back tomorrow because there's always questions after questions. But basically, we have someone there full time, so they can do that because we want to get the best proposals so the operations committee can do a good deep dive and evaluate those, get to a short list, and then the fun comes in when we get to see the presentations and interviews. So then we select RGC. And then we have, I was hoping to get the proposal today from Apex Engineering because what we need to do right now is work on the zoning, which is through Newcastle County. Howard thought he might have it today, but, well, I don't have my computer here, so I don't know if he sent it to me since I came here to the board meeting, but we're rocking and rolling. So the operations committee, try not to pepper all of you with so many emails, but there's a lot going on, and I know that not everyone will be able to make all the meetings, but we're going to do the best we can, and I appreciate everyone responding to me, and, we're going to go from there, so good things going to happen.
Yeah, and that's a different, just so that we're clear, it's a different committee than what Tiffany is talking about, so that we all... are clear on that.
And then,
that
high
day,
school.
Right, and then that day, are we going to get provided just like everyone's proposal ahead of time,
oh, yeah.
Or how's
so
that going to work?
They're
so
due.
That
they have to be dropped gonna, off.
I know there was a bunch of different timelines,
yeah.
But we had like
so,
the 12th and then the 18th. And
I know I skewed a lot of emails.
Yeah.
We will have almost a week for the committee. I'm going to send them to you.
Okay.
So you'll be able to digest them and look at them. And then the following week, it's Monday, I think the following Wednesday, or by Monday we want to notify the shortlisters. I forget the date. It's not next Monday, it's the following Monday. And then that Wednesday, we blocked out from 12 o'clock to 5 or 6 o'clock, I think here, or the conference room, so we can do the presentations. Interviews. So then the committee can select the GC, very similar to what we did before.
And they'll also give us estimates of time frames.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what you'll see in this, so we won't have a GMP yet, like
a price for the overall job, because it's too early, but what you'll see is the fees. Because you want to see the architectural fees, like the percentages. So we basically will, if I know Howard, he'll set up a spreadsheet, so we'll have everyone that bid, and he'll break it down for us so we can do a good comparison. It won't be hard to narrow our choices down, mm-hmm. Because you'll see some outliers, and then we'll see what we come up with. But it's basically all the fees that go into the design build program, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting process, exciting process.
Okay, so the last agenda item, actually just very quickly, financial audit, when are the auditors scheduled?
It's done.
They're coming in September then? For the board
meeting? No, it'll probably, that's a good question, they'll probably be in October, because it's due by October 1.
Yep.
They'll be here October. Eunice, don't let me forget that, that is the agenda.
For October.
It's due by October.
These are the department, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're coming in October?
They'll come in October. They'll come to the October board meeting, that's normally what they do.
The timing.
Would you want it to be approved?
I thought they would come before.
Before
the submission.
Oh no, it's submitted now.
So you just, when you get it, you just submit it.
Well, maybe it's the audit, I guess.
There's nothing we can change about the results.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
I'd say the other thing that will be forthcoming for the board is our contract will be up with Barbara King Thornton, so we do have to kind of go through that RFP process to select another auditor, and that is on our radar too, so that'll be coming down as well.
And I think we...
In that process,
Okay, so
you already have a process for that?
Well, we started to discuss it, and I know that's one of the things Greg and I had talked about, and we had talked about with FOC.
Yeah, I won't say anything to the company now, but after everything is submitted and they're done, they understand that they're auditors. But we'll do
what they don't understand because they're auditors. No.
But the RFP will go out to local firms, and then just like we'll see who wants the business. But then, good thing we have our chief auditor right here on staff. So.
No. We'll go through that. So we'll go through the process. We'll review it at the FOC, make sure we're good there, and then present something, a recommendation to the board.
Okay, last agenda item, head of school report, Margie, please.
So I sent it to you guys so early, so I'm sure you have it all read, and so we'll make it short and sweet. But biggest thing is enrollment. So as of today, 945 students. So initially we were gonna be at 943. We did have a situation where like the next student in line was a twin, and then we had another situation where it was a hardship situation where we had a mother deported, leaving the mother with the child, and so we brought in the second child to sort of help that family. So but we're still at 105%, so we're looking good, and so that's the breakdown. And if you notice here, so for the first time we went over 1,000. Over 1,000 applications. Our wait list now is 1,000 plus.
Jesus. Just for the wait list.
Just the wait list, yep. So we continue to have a wait list that, you know, exceeds our enrollment. So, interesting.
Question for families that are on the wait list, and I know this maybe is a bit of a side, what happens, I mean, they're on the wait list, I'm guessing they're applying to several different charter schools. Mm-hmm.
They stay active through September 30th, and one of the benefits having the choice application, mm-hmm. which is statewide, is that we can see, so if you applied for three different schools, and then your number comes up with us, we can see that you already accepted at another school.
I see.
And so we don't call you because we're not going to play tug of war with another school.
Even though they might really want to be here.
Yeah, but they've already signed a 1-year commitment to that other choice school, so we've got to respect it. It's not legally binding, so a lawyer could probably contest it, but, you know, it just...
I think each child can be choiced in the three schools per school district. So,
oh, Lord.
Yeah. And in Red Clay, if you get a seat for your first choice, they don't even run the lottery for you anymore.
For these types of, for the application process too, so I mean, that's a big wait list, right? We have I'm not a parent, I'm not involved in this process, but when you apply to these things, is it just a matter of like, oh, just check a box, or you have to kind of, so when they...
Except But Cam Calloway is an audition based
on
merit.
Right, right.
I think that those are considered magnet schools, though.
Right.
So they have a preference list, so you're there's five maybe preferences. But like Christina, it's just checking boxes, really.
And we're included on that list. And so really, it's not like they submitted an application and kind of thoughtfully put it together. It's just like,
Super easy. Except for the the specialty schools like Connor School of Science, they don't even give out of district kids interviews, but you have to do a science project, you have to have your grades pooled. CAD has auditions.
Got it.
Newark or Charter of Bloomington, there's actually like an SAT type test. So you can check your boxes, but then they have a second level, which would be to even enter their lottery, you have to pass these levels.
So one thing I wanted to share with you, and I'm not going to go through it completely, but I just wanted to give you an idea of how we kicked off our school year. As you know, we had asked everybody on the team to read the Resilient Learners book. We also gave a copy to all of our board members. Because it is something that we're looking to implement throughout our community. So we started off the meeting by just, Lourdes was able to come and greet everybody, which was nice. But if you want to really find out like who's on the team, this gives you all of the different team lineups or team rosters. So you can see all of the team players, and we noted whether somebody is new or not. With the stars, so we had some new team members, lots of new team members. So it was nice, we were able to actually have the entire team in the auditorium. So a lot of times when we have professional development, it's very much instructional focus. So our operational people don't really participate, but this was one where everybody was together. So it was nice. But you guys can go through that and meet our team. But then what we did is then roll into the next steps for
the congratulations somebody I knew had a name change.
Okay, so so it was interesting. So if it says congratulations, it's a returning team member. They just got married and changed their name. So Grace was with us now for 2 years. Ashley in second grade got married. She has a different last name.
Ms. Rulof
is no
longer Brittany.
So we're having to get used to some name changes. Allison's another one. Yeah. And this is nice. This is the first year we actually now have self-contained sixth grade team, and then we've got a seventh grade team, and then an eighth grade team. So that's really exciting. And then we have our enrichment teachers, which, by the way, so Brenda Hartman, after the kickoff of the year, she informed us that she was leaving to join Colonial. Her last day's Friday, so we were able to backfill her position, and that person starts next Monday. And then today we discovered that Sarah also accepted a position at a different school. It's a promotion for her, so we're happy for her. So we're making some shifts there. And then our specials team. So one thing we were able to do with the reorganization is now having distinct primary school team and then secondary school team. So our specials teachers are now aligned to either primary or secondary, which is nice. The specials teachers really appreciate getting to know the students a lot better, because before they were stretched over the K to 8. But the thing we then talked about was a summer reading. And so if you guys haven't read the book, I encourage you to do so, so that you can sort of continue to follow us through this process. But we, you know, in the auditorium, we worked, we were in groups. We asked people to just jot down, like, what is something that, you know, what's something that the book made you aware of, or it changed your opinion of something. And then we started talking about sort of, like, my nuggets of knowledge was the fact that it is a mindset. And we watched some videos, and you can feel free to watch the videos at your leisure. But it's also something that, to be a trauma-sensitive school, that does involve everyone in the community. And this was a nice video that I saw on a Sunday, one of my favorite Sunday show, about a school bus driver and how he delivers, he connects with his students in a very special way. So making the point that it is everybody, whether you work in the cafeteria, you drive the bus, everybody has a role. But then we also started talking about how, trauma-sensitive is really addressing the hierarchy of needs. And if you look at our mission and vision, it's very much aligned to that. So we talked about the hierarchy of needs, and in our breakout sessions, we asked the team to really say, like, where, when you look at the physiological needs, how well are we addressing those needs? And they listed things that we're doing really well, whether it's the school meal program, whether it's coffee in the lounge, having ice in the lounge, you know. So they listed a lot of great things. But then we asked them to then say, what are things that would really mean even more to you? What are things that we're not doing that you'd like us to do? And they did that for each level of the hierarchy. And
I said we were very honest.
You were.
Yeah.
And we have actually summarized all of that from those charts. And we have it in a PowerPoint. And we have actually been discussing it in our admin meeting to talk about sort of next steps. So it's been really helpful, and so we talked about how this all aligns to, you know, what we're all about is our mission and our vision. So this isn't really something different or something else. It's actually sort of the gel that can really help to bring it all together. So we have given it a name, and it is Aspira con Cariño. So if you walk around the school, you'll see signs with this phrase, and con cariño means with care. With love, you know, so it's a reminder that, you know, are we representing ourselves as Aspira con Cariño? And as far as like the steps that we're going to be taking is we first need to have self help and self support. So it's about building team resilience. So we're focusing on the team and making sure that we've addressed their needs. And then we will be looking at the broader community and then obviously the aspirantes. So very excited about it, and we'll continue to update you guys on how it's going. But these are the different activities that we have done, and closing. People will forget what you said, they'll forget what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel. So it was a really good kickoff, and we immediately addressed some of the ideas that came from it. So for example, one thing that came up was, we implemented, it's been a couple of years that we've had school spirit Fridays, which means that our team members can wear jeans as long as they're wearing a school spirit top. So one of the things that was suggested is, can we have it Fridays and Mondays? And so then we thought about it and thought, you know, there's some low hanging fruit here. That's not really something that costs us anything, but it adds a lot of value. And if you think about what we expect our teachers to do, we expect them to be engaged with our students. We expect them to be on the carpet with them. We expect them to be sitting with them, playing with them on the playground, like interacting with them. So jeans, not really something that hurts us in any way. I don't think that it's a lack of professionalism. Obviously, there's some guidelines. They can't have holes. They can't be ripped up. But it was really neat to see the response that got, because immediately after having the session, we came out and said, this is one of the things, we hear you, and this is one of the things. So effective immediately, they can wear jeans as long as they have a school spirit top. So, you know, you can see that they're coming to work and there hasn't been any dress code issues or concerns, but people have come to work, I think, feeling a lot more comfortable. And I think feeling a lot just better about the response that we gave. Tiffany, you can add your two cents.
Yeah, I was going to just say, it is nice because, I mean, there are days, like I said, like I want to be out there playing four square with my kids, and it's like, well, if I have to dress more, you know, business casual, I can't be out there running around in a dress. I mean, I do, but, I mean, it's more comfortable to be in jeans and sneakers that are... So I appreciate it, and I noticed a lot of other team members have been utilizing that, and it is just nice to just come to work comfortable and know, like, I don't have to worry about, you know, being uncomfortable and stuffy all day.
Mm-hmm. So, but we're continuing to look at that list that they created for us, and I'll continue to give you updates on other things that we do. And then we did an academic update, so I want to... give a shout out to Mike Rittmeyer, our math supervisor. He was able to really take the data that we received from the Department of Education, which for the first time was disaggregated by grade, by category and for all schools in the state, which we've never been able to get it to that detail. So the information that I shared with you, I mean, I know immediately when we presented in the Academic Excellence Committee, Lourdes was like, well, how's this compared to last year? And it's like, we didn't get it last year. So, you know, hopefully the Department of Education will give it to us going forward so that we can see the difference. But, you know, it was nice to see that when you look at our, you know, these are the four goals that we always talk about front of mind, because we, in the Longwood Foundation grant, this is what we've held ourselves accountable for as far as academic outcomes. So we report to them each year and tell them how we're doing. So one of the goals was that 50% or greater of our students would meet state proficiency by spring of 19. So we basically had a 42% success rate in meeting that. Then there was 17%. There's two data points that we were within 5 points, right? So if you add the 17 to the 42, we almost got there, you know? But the other thing that was important is looking at the growth. And so if you look at the growth, what percentage of our students achieved their growth target? That was an 80% success rate. So these two tables sort of showing you that. And what I've said in the past, obviously, if this high percentage of our students are hitting their growth target, you can see it when you look at it by level 1, 2, 3, 4 of proficiency, that we have more of our students, they're sitting in that level 2. So they're basically getting closer and closer to the tipping point where that 2 will become a 3, and we'll start seeing the higher growth in the proficiency. So the other one is also how we compare to Christina and Colonial, which is 85% of our students. So we achieve 100% success rate as far as being higher overall compared to the two districts. But then we exceeded the two districts and 75% of the data points. So this is Christina. The ones in red are the ones where we were less than Christina. And we've seen that trend in third grade. Last year was definitely this other trend in fourth grade, which I like to say is an outlier, that we have not had that before. But I've mentioned before that we had several different transitions happening in that grade. But then the rest are green. So, but overall, 50% versus 40%, and you can see the overall there. We also measure our success in the growth of our educators, so that was 100% a success rate. And then we also added in there, you know, we had asked Longwood Foundation, okay, we have some other outcomes that are not necessarily test scores, but really are another indication of how we are supporting a very positive learning environment, which we feel is our curricular and extracurricular program. So, you know, we're going to be monitoring how many programs do we offer, and then what's the level of percentage of participation. So it was nice to see an increase there. And then the rest of the slides is just data overload, but we diced it and sliced it every single possible way. This one is comparing ourselves to ourselves. So since Smarter Balance was implemented in spring of 2015, we're looking to see how it's changed over the year. So over here, I compared 15 to 19, 16 to 19, 17 to 19, et cetera. So, you know, just if you go with the color codes, the greens are showing where we've had positive change, and the pinks are where we've had a negative change, and then yellow is no change. So that's how we've been doing compared to ourselves. And then the disaggregated information. What was interesting is Mike was able to actually grab three school districts, including Red Clay. So now you're talking about 95% of our students are represented in these slides. So when you look at all students, this is us compared to the state. We're lower than the state by about 3 points. And then in math, we're lower by about 4 points. But then when you look at the actual district comparison, all students were higher in ELA than the three districts. And they were also higher in math than the three districts. And then when you dig even deeper into the disaggregated categories, Hispanic, etc., you see the same thing. So I won't go through all the slides, you have them all, but basically making sure that we're not just looking at our student achievement through just one lens, through one measurement, one metric, but really looking at it across the board. So it was really helpful to get the disaggregated information, because We've struggled to get it for our own students, but we've never been able to see how we compare to the other schools.
Yeah.
Further into the slides, we also took it to the, so you can see actual charter schools. So I'm just gonna forward there. I don't wanna make you dizzy. But here is where we were able to see where we were compared to the students. This one, you know, Mike made a good point. He wanted to definitely include that column where it says number of students tested. So obviously, when you have a larger population, it can definitely skew the numbers, you know? But so sometimes you gotta be sure that you're comparing apples to apples. So that's why I didn't do any type of ranking order here. I just highlighted it for you and you can sort of draw your own conclusions. But this was, you know, all students in ELA and all students in math. But then when you start going into the different categories, you know, obviously here we've got 310 students in this category where other schools have very few. But then it goes on the flip side too, like the African American students, we only have 60, yet like Charter School of Newark has 404 and Edison has 429. So you have to sort of like take it all in.
So when I saw on a lot of those slides, go back to the slide you just said.
Which one you want to see?
Okay, up the top.
This,
that means what?
They
didn't have enough students.
They don't have
to
enough
make it
students.
Count.
Yeah.
So all three of them.
All
are
three of
just,
them have less than 15 kids, so it can't count.
And that's all over in different categories. So
yes.
They just put them all at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, the cell, I'm pretty sure the cell is like 30 or 40 students. If you're below 30, 40, you're not going to have a percentage.
Right.
So would you say that comparing ourselves to other charter schools maybe represents us better than comparing ourselves to an entire school district?
It
when you have the slides of Red Clay and Colonial and Christina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it says that we're doing a whole lot better. With
well,
those kids.
I thought that too until I thought about like Red Clay has some other schools
they have
that
a good
they
amount.
Bring, and they don't have control over that kind of stuff. So
no, but Red Clay has Cap Calloway in their numbers. They have DMA. Well, not DMA. Those are high schools. But they have Conrad in their numbers.
But they have some.
They have
like
other choice programs.
Schools that are in there too.
Yeah.
And you know, in Colonial. I mean, I thought about this all weekend. You know, I looked at the numbers, like they're testing thousands, we're testing hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
They're testing some of the underserved schools,
mm-hmm.
and that's thrown in there. So what is, kind of where is our best representation? Are we better represented here, or is it?
Well, I think the narrative is, my perspective, I think the narrative is different, but at least from my perspective and, you know, discussing with the academic committee, when I compare myself with the district schools and I perform better,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I said Las Americas and Speed Academy perform better. I guess my narrative is for those students that came from those districts, I was able to put them better,
I
offer
agree.
Them better.
Yes, I like the slides that broke out the demographic
because
that.
Yeah, because I served them. That's why
I
we're serving them better because
mm-hmm.
they came from the same population
right.
that would have come from Christiana or from Colonial. We're making them perform
mm-hmm.
better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the narrative. It's a little bit more difficult with the charter schools because they come from, just like our students.
Mm-hmm.
They can come from anywhere,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know their distribution.
Right.
No, we don't know. So it's a little.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I wanted to have this view as well with the charter school is, I mean, just like us, all the charter schools have a premise
that
they would have a differentiating factor
mm-hmm.
of what
yeah.
they offer. And I think it's only fair that we also compare ourselves with it, what would be considered a peer, you know, from a charter school perspective. I think we need to know where we're at. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just like the students that are coming to us are choosing us, they can choose any of the others. So I think that we need to understand, you know, where do we rank or where do we, but, you know, once again, though, we don't have choice. I mean, we don't have preferences. We serve what we get.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue that the fact that we're a bilingual school
make itself a differentiating factor in terms of the choice happens somewhere else, but it's done by the parents. It's not by us. We serve who we get.
Right.
So
is there a way to compare it to other dual language schools?
That's
to me, that's
the only one is Academia.
Comparison.
So in each of these slides, you can compare us to Academia.
Yeah, and they're pretty early on in the process. I mean,
they've gone through their first renewal, so they're in year five.
There's no way we can compare ourselves to similar schools in different states, right?
Or different, what about different, I mean, Aspida is everywhere, right? So.
Yeah, but there's different state tests. You're talking about PART versus Smarter Balance.
Yeah, I think we're missing a clear key. Even though the districts have larger numbers, these are kids from low-income areas. These are kids from those schools that you're talking about, that Rick Clay has and that Christina has. These are not kids who are the cream of the crop, that are the high flyers. These are kids that you would see in those schools no matter what those numbers are. So if you have them, and I have them, and I can raise them to this level, they're the same kids.
Right.
You're doing something different. So what is that different thing? To me, that I want to compare against other districts that I'm taking kids from. Because it says very clearly whether or not I can take kids from a low income, because a lot of our kids are from low income neighborhoods and low income schools, traditionally. And I can move them much farther than you can in your environment. I think that says a lot.
I also think, too, with not half the time, but taking into account that our kids aren't getting English instruction every single day.
Yep.
So we are competing amongst other schools, charter district, where kids are getting, I guess, traditional English instruction every single day. Our kids are doing it half the time. In two languages.
And some of the things that we're the better at, we're not getting measured on.
Right.
Like the Spanish development or
some types
of critical thinking or something like that. The language helps,
right.
But don't.
So I'm always, like, as a second grade teacher, SBAC isn't in my, like, realm of thinking, but I always look at the scores and I go, okay, but we're competing with kids that are doing traditional school, and we're still keeping up, if not exceeding, and I think that's also very
interesting. And they have, this is a fact, they have many more resources than we have.
Exactly.
I'm in it. I see it. So it's very different.
It's telling.
So when I looked at that, I was like, wow. And then I was the one asking some questions about comparing from one year to the next to see from that trajectory where we were. But when I look at that, and then when I go back and disaggregate it, and I look at it from a disaggregated standpoint, there are some questions I have, especially around the English language learners and some of the supports or some of the things that they obviously need that are not there. But when I look at it from a whole, I'm like, we're doing good stuff.
No, I agree. I mean, I had to look at it from two points of view. You know, I'm telling you, I was very impressed. And my mom is an auditor, and I made her look at this too because could not believe what I was seeing. But it's very impressive what the school has been able to do, especially when you pulled out the slides. I mean, I really did. It renewed faith. Let's just say that it made me feel like, wow, this is. We want to touch this community. We want to support these kids. But then on the parent side, it's always been the nagging question of, are they going to be able to translate well district to district? And you know, the proof is going to be in our division, the Red Clay district. Our concern wasn't with her, but you know, I think that's a question. When a parent goes on a limb and we put our faith in a charter school, that's what we're hoping. I know we're not the cream of the crop, but we're trying to better our school where we were. And I'm Colonial School District, so my choice in hoping to get something better. I'm not saying I'm not. I'm saying finally, I think I sat here. Now this is like the third time where we've been and presented these scores, but I feel like this time around, I really feel like
there's a movement in the right area, in the right direction.
Right.
Do we need to do more? Yes.
Yeah.
And I think the conversation is with the committee and with the head of school is that we've got to do better. So what are the things that we need to put into place to do better?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact, we're going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And any real systemic change requires a lot of things, because it has to start with the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get the teachers all in the same, going in the same direction and the same supports, same professional development. And then once we put those things in place, then we transition those to the kids. And then we start looking at what their needs are and what we have to address their needs and what we need to address their needs. That takes time. And so last year I was like really pushing. I was like, oh no, this doesn't work. But when I saw it this time, when I saw it broken out and disaggregated,
right,
and then compared to the charters, compared to the districts, I think we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think last year we asked for the red clay. And it was, I mean, I was astounded. That was very reassuring that we are at least in there. I mean, again, I don't know if it's apples to apples, but.
Never.
Well, it won't ever be apples to apples.
Right.
Because we're offering something different.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be apples to apples, but if I put kids in, like I've always argued and been an advocate for growth, not proficiency.
Yeah.
Because I think proficiency says that no matter where a kid comes in,
mm-hmm,
I have a responsibility, whether they're special ed, whether they're complex special ed, whether they're gifted and talented, I have a responsibility to move them all to the same place. But that's the possibilities of doing that aren't very real.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm looking and this is breaking out, because like I said, my question would be, okay, what do we need to do for the English language learners? Because they seem to be drifting behind. But that's a national trend.
Right.
So it's just not ours. But that would be the conversation I would be having, because I think the ELA and I think the math, we're moving in the right direction. I think for me, I'm not a patient person, so I want to do it faster. But we'll get there if we can identify through all the assessments that we give that and the projections that we have for our kids, the goals. When we set all those in place and they're realistic, and then we do those things we need, then we'll be okay. So I don't see anything in that data that really scares me. I see some things in the data that I'm concerned about, but I don't see anything that scares me to the point to say, Lord, like, we need to have a conversation. We have to do something really different here. I think that we have to continue the direction. I think we have to support the school with the professional development. I think this idea, because it's national, I just left Washington State last week for land, and they were really heavy into this, like really looking at the trauma and the impact that it's having on kids. I keep arguing it's having the same impact on adults, on teachers in classrooms, that we're exposing our kids to, that there's a lot there too. So if we can start building that in, which Margie has done, I was so glad when she gave us the book and she said, this is the course we're going in. Because as you convert teachers into being whole, then it helps kids be whole.
One thing I'll say too is that this disaggregated information helped to validate our progress, because it was easy for others to dismiss,
mm-hmm,
our comparisons, because they would quickly say, well, your students don't look like our students,
right,
you know?
Right.
They do that to Newark Charter all the time, right? So people try to like invalidate their standards because it's like, well, their students don't look like ours. But then when you break down the groups, low income, our low-income students look like your low-income,
mm-hmm,
students. Our Hispanic students look like your Hispanic students. So now those excuses sort of go out the window. So I think it really did help to validate. What's ironic is that, you know, we were able to do this deep dive, and it's very valuable, and I was glad that we now have this. Ironically, I got contacted on Thursday by the Department of Education. Apparently, Secretary Bunting is doing a new thing where, in years past, she has met with every superintendent after the release of the Smarter Balance to talk about the results and what they're going to do to improve. So now, for the first time, she's including charter schools.
Hmm.
So I will be meeting with Secretary Bunting, I believe it's next week, to basically go through our data. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to have this in my back pocket. They're going to provide me with their version of the data. But it's interesting. So now it just feels more reassuring that we're doing the right thing. So I appreciate you guys looking at that. But there's more information there for you guys. One thing I wanted to just end with was, let me see, we talked about the expansion. Oh,
Mark,
so,
I'm sorry, for those scores, because I always feel like I always have to reground myself on the framework.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind sending me an email of the framework of when we say someone is proficient, like the levels, the kind of how
one,
that...
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah,
the cut scores change by grade and by content
okay.
area.
Okay.
So that won't be as helpful, but
okay.
yeah. When you think of... Because I
always felt like I always had to reground myself
yeah.
to say, okay, this is what I'm looking at, this is what I'm looking to measure.
Yeah.
Because I'm just trying to continue to wrap my head around the
sure.
academic piece, that's all.
Yeah.
So,
that's fine. So the one thing I just wanted to, I mentioned to you guys that one of the decisions we needed to make was what's going to be the name of the high school. And I know that, so we're moving forward with developing the website. As a matter of fact, tomorrow after school, we're meeting with our web designer to go over how it's progressing. But we want to be able to launch it in September and be ready for the choice window that opens in November. So obviously the name is really important so that we make sure we have the right domain. But we had talked about like either the Las Americas theme where you have sort of the three schools, you know, primary, secondary, high school, or is Aspida the theme where this is Las Americas Aspida Academy and the other campus is Aspida High School. I would like to recommend that we actually, I think it's a sort of a hybrid of the two suggestions. Las Americas Aspida Academy, we are LAAA, and we basically now have an East Newark campus and a West Newark campus, because the reality is that the other campus may not be a high school, it may be a junior, senior, you know, like it may be a combination, and down the road that campus may turn into just a middle school campus. So sort of keeping LAA, which we know, even though that's our full name, we are called Aspida, we're known as Aspida Academy, but basically creating the separation just by campus. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So we're going to move forward with that, and I will share with you the web design at our true September meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then last but not least, I wanted to give you guys an opportunity. So here's Rush Uniform Order Form. So they've given us some special pricing for our team members and obviously for our board members, but what we would like to do is to purchase a polo shirt for every board member. So you see it at the bottom left corner is the polo shirt. And it will have the Paul print with the LAAA, and then below it will say board member. So at the very least, if you can flip it on the other side, put your name, put your size, we'd like to order the polo shirts for you. But I also emailed you this order form so that if you'd like to order some other spirit wear, you're welcome to do so. What we've done with Rush is that they deliver the merchandise here so that you don't have to pay shipping and handling. But they did create a store for us online, but they have to charge shipping and handling if you go that route.
Right.
The short sleeve navy polo shirt, that's what you're talking
yes.
about?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume they're men's cut.
They are.
Okay. Good.
Actually, yeah. If you go see Jennifer did get some of the women's cut,
okay.
and she has samples.
Okay.
Name.
For the women's cut, you got to go up a size.
Oh,
many
yeah.
sizes. It's not as,
yeah.
not like the Somos Familia
oh my
t-shirts.
Gosh, those
no.
shirts, I was like.
No.
So just, that
yeah,
simple?
Yeah, then just give it back
right.
to me. We'd like to order those and get those for you guys.
I'm done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I had.
All right. I'll say I know Brittany will want some gear, so
yes.
I will take the online one.
Yep, that's all I need.
Okay.
First thing she's going to ask.
Thank you.
Where's mine?
So this is the men, so it should be large. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Yeah, two of them.
Do I have a second?
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you everybody.